Boulder City Podcast, where we feature discussions with the unique personalities we find in our small town. I'm your host, Roger Gross, and today we continue our series of interviews with candidates for City Council and Mayor in partnership with Boulder City Social. This week, we sit down with Valerie McNay, who is running for City Council. McNay has been a Boulder City resident since 1992, when she first arrived to do a triathlon at Lake Mead. She was employed by the Clark County School District for more than 20 years as a speech pathologist for young children. She has served on the city's Parks and Recreation Commission and was on the Ad Hoc Pool Advisory Committee and the Boulder City Library's Board of Trustees for 8 years. She is also president of the Boulder City branch of the American Association of University Women and is a former moderator for the Boulder City Community Alliance's Facebook page. She spoke with me in Boulder City last week. The Boulder City Podcast is sponsored by the Emerald Island Casino and the Rainbow Club Casino in downtown Henderson, where slot players are treated like royalty. Welcome to the Boulder City Podcast. Our guest today is Valerie McNay, a candidate for City Council. Valerie, thanks for joining us. It's great to have you here, and congratulations on entering the race.
Well, thank you, Roger. Nice to meet you. And Do you want me to give you a little background?
Please do. Yes.
Yeah. So I discovered Boulder City in 1992, and upon qualifying for a championship triathlon in 92, and of course they saw called it the Las Vegas Triathlon, but it took place at the lake.
Right. Yeah.
The swim,
right,
the exactly. bike, it was all Lake Mead National Recreation Area, and I fell in love with this beautiful. Just still, when I see the view of the lake going down to the lake and the river mountains, I live over there by Hemingway Park.
Sure.
That's awesome. And then this is great. I know I just did another triathlon 30 years later at the Rage Triathlon. It was on April 30th, so I can still do it.
Okay.
And I tell everybody, you do not have to get fast. You have to get old.
Right.
Then nobody's in your age group. Yeah. And so you win automatically.
That's right. That's a good tip there.
Yeah. And, you know, I just love the Bighorn Sheep. So in 92, I came and did the race, and that's when I first discovered Boulder City. And then 2 years later, in 94, I accepted a position at Clark County School District as a speech-language pathologist treating preschool children with developmental disabilities. And prior to that, I was a researcher at the University of Kansas. When I relocated to Nevada, they were really mad because I was ABD, all but dissertation.
Yeah, okay.
And the universities do not like it when their people leave before they totally finish the program. But I was able to complete my dissertation at Clark County School District and was awarded my PhD in Educational Policy, Ethics, and Law in 2002.
Okay, great. So I understand you it was kind of a last-minute decision for you to run for City Council. Mm-hmm. What was behind that decision?
Friends.
Okay.
Friends suggested that I run due to my involvement in so many Boulder City organizations that they know me for. Like commissions, I'm on the Parks and Rec Commission. I was on the Library Board for 8 years. Mm-hmm. Committees, I was on the Ad Hoc Pool Committee. And I'm president of the American Association of University Women, the Boulder City branch. I'm a friend of the library, and I'm going to the Women in Support of Women groups that meet once a month here in Boulder City, for Boulder City. So I think that's... They just were very, it's very heartwarming when people want you to run and think that you would be a good person for their city leadership.
Sure.
So I was touched, and then they told me not to say this, but it was like right last minute that, you know, if I didn't do it that day, that it would have been too late. I couldn't really think about it long term.
Right.
So I went ahead and registered. So.
Great. Well, we're glad you're in the race. So what do you hope to accomplish if you're elected?
Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about because it's a frequently asked question.
Sure.
And I decided that I'm really believe in high quality customer service for residents and customers. And as long as I've been here, almost 30 years, I constantly hear concerns about getting permits and for businesses and residents, and the utility billing issues are common concerns that people report to me. And so I keep thinking that I'd want to improve the quality of the customer service. I mean, I keep thinking when you're a public servant, you need to serve the public.
Right.
And I never read it before until I ran. They have that strategic plan, and they have the core values in there about, you know, serving the public with integrity and fiscal responsibility, professional excellence, transparent communication, openness, innovation. So those are the kinds of things that I would hope to accomplish.
Right.
The other goals I'm interested in infrastructure, investing that we invest in infrastructure in our city.
Sure.
And promoting historic preservation. Mm. To all of us who live here want to promote that,
right.
I think.
Yep.
And sustaining a high level of public safety and healthcare services in Boulder City.
Okay, great. So, when the election happened 3 or 4 years ago, when the entire city council was turned over, mm-hmm. new mayor, new council people, obviously the big, issue behind that was slow growth ordinance. You know, mm-hmm. There was some question about, we're going to develop something down by mm-hmm. I-11, and, mm-hmm. it could be kind of a mess. So what's your position on slow growth? Obviously, I'm not mm-hmm. saying obviously, I just found out there's a few people that really favor no growth at absolutely. Absolutely, how do you approach that?
Okay. I strongly support what I like to call smart conservative growth.
Because
okay. sometimes when you use the word control, people get a little upset.
Right.
And I definitely believe in growth. I don't believe in no growth. And I think that if this is the question, because there's so many things. In the early days, I knew Ralph Denton
sure.
proposed
mm-hmm.
the slow growth ordinance,
right.
and loved him and think he did a really smart thing for our
sure,
community. And then
sure
there was an election
right.
back then,
mm-hmm.
and 74% of the population voted for
yeah.
controlled growth. But I do think, following my questions here, I'd want to proceed with the sale of Track 350, though.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Since the voters agreed
on
that.
It's already been agreed to, yeah.
A decade ago, mm-hmm. and because 90% of the land sale is going to go to the new community pool, which we desperately need. I saw this in the Facebook today, but our Boulder City High School swim team, the girls won the regional championship.
There you go.
And the boys were runners up. So
that history in Boulder City of great swimmers. So, we should have a great pool to go along with that, don't you think?
Right, because they can practice there, mm-hmm. but they can't do dive in because it's too shallow.
I mean, right.
All the requirements for the standards and requirements are not appropriate. So we need a new pool. And I think that, in terms about just getting people, we want to get people into Boulder City. Well, if we had a decent pool with the kids, they did these tournaments
mm-hmm.
now,
right.
we could have watched them here if
sure.
they could have, and everyone would have come, and they
mm-hmm.
stay,
right.
and they're going to watch it, So I think it's also financially advantageous if we were
right.
to have a pool that we could really use, and our kids could be participate right at home and
sure.
not have
well,
to travel
be a,
around.
A tourist attraction as well.
I mean,
people would come in from other towns to see their kids swim. So,
right.
That way makes sense. So tell us about the Track 350. Obviously, it's changed a little bit since we voted to do it. I mean, they said it was approximately 100 homes,
Okay.
But with the way these new proposals have come in, they're making it a little more dense. And, I think it's up to 180 homes or something like that. So do you think we should stick with the original thing of 100 homes, or would you be in favor of allowing a few more homes just to get some more residents in there?
Well, I think, we were so lucky. Back in the day when we first put that track up for sale,
mm-hmm.
no responses from any developers
right.
at all.
Sure.
Zero.
Right.
And it was supposed to be for the golf course, but it got paid off. So, mm-hmm. so then, people, I think that, I was. They always think that they got defeated the first time,
right.
Because of cost. But it was because of the way that was going to be paid through taxes. Your property
right.
taxes were going to shoot up
sure,
to cover
right.
it. So now, these developers, at least, I think that the three developers and maybe five different plans were submitted for this
mm-hmm.
RFP. So times are different now.
Right.
And I thought that the council thought that the Toll Brother developer was the best bid.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look up their site, they do beautiful luxury homes at
mm-hmm.
5,000 and 7,000 acres
right.
on golf courses.
Right.
That was one of the plans I thought they were looking at. I don't know if they've actually rezoned yet or if that's got to
happen. Yeah, I think that's the next step.
Okay.
And that's where the council will come in, and your membership on the council will play a big role in what happens there.
Mm-hmm. So. But I did look, and I know some people that actually lived in one of the toll. In Henderson, there's mm-hmm. a golf course there
yep.
that has so at these 5,000 and 7,000
right. mm-hmm.
feet, and they were beautiful.
Yeah,
and they were impressed. And so the density, but I think that the concern was we had put opportunities for the people that live there close
right.
by. They didn't
mm-hmm.
they have an opportunity to have a public meeting?
Right.
They held with the neighbors, considering the size of the lots. And some of the adjacent homeowners prefer larger size
mm-hmm.
lots. And I'm not sure if that would affect their appraisal or the appraisal of the way, right. You know, why, what their concerns are, but they had a concern. And we want to listen to our citizens and residents and so forth. So so the current zoning would have to be changed, right, if we were to go with the R5, R7 use for the track. But again, when I was looking at, I kept thinking, well, why would people, I mean, I live in a 1,200 square foot condo.
Yeah, right.
I'm thinking 5,000. That to me is large.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when I think 10,000, 15,000, I think, wow, that's huge. And I don't know how that will break down in terms of how much the developer makes and how much city money the city makes, because that's stuff I would have to learn from the staff and other things. But so I, you know, that higher density thing doesn't bother me, but then I don't live there. And I think, well, we're talking about Bristlecone Street, which has, that's across from the storybook homes that. Yeah. And there's a little bit bigger homes in there. Mm-hmm. But Adams itself, across from the cottages.
Right, yeah.
How big are the cottages?
Pretty small.
I know. So I don't know that and I don't live there, and I'm not an architect or whatever, but I think that we need to work on getting it approved somehow. And getting
with you'd be willing to listen then to all kinds of arguments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
So another factor we've recently been involved in is the encroachment of Henderson into the El Dorado Valley. They apparently have annexed this piece of land, it's apparently water under the bridge. Nothing we can do about it. But how do we stop them right there? I mean, there's still a lot of land between us and Henderson that's unincorporated. I mean, should we go in and annex all that land up to where Henderson is?
Well, I don't know if we have that opportunity, but we need to investigate and find out. I mean, that's one thing I thought. I believe that, city leaders and staff, we need to contact all the powers to be, local, state, federal, for ways to accomplish the task of not letting Henderson encroach on the El Dorado Valley.
Right.
I mean, even some residents have been upset that we have so many solar plants over there because they think that's because, part of the time when we got the land was not just for the energy zone, but also for habitat to protect desert tortoises and other wildlife. Mm-hmm. And so people have been doing recreational stuff out there, and they don't want to see it developed. And then we all drive into Henderson and freak out when we see how much is built and built and crunch everything in. And I don't know what Deborah March, she's term limited. She's running for lieutenant governor now, isn't she?
Yeah.
So I don't know what Henderson, but they annexed. I don't know if we can get that reversed, but maybe we can prevent them from building anything out there. So I don't know where that would go, but I certainly, I think in agreement with most of our citizens that we don't want that to be developed, any buildings out there and stuff like that.
Right. So, during the pandemic, we had, obviously problems for the businesses and restaurants and things of that nature. Some of them closed down. Some of them closed down since then. Mm-hmm. Some as a result of a pandemic. Some just, other practices. Do you think that the city does enough to support businesses that are existing and new businesses that are coming into the city?
Well, I was trying to find out a little bit more about that. Remember, they had the PPP small business loans during the height of the pandemic. And I don't know if the city could help them. I wasn't able to find out on the website, but that I did, someone I was talking to, former city council person, they said that they found a thing that showed like 18 pages of PPP in Boulder City, the people that got PPP loans.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe that was independent of the city. I'm not sure if the city.
Yeah, I think that was federal money. Yeah.
Right, it was federal money. I don't know if the city helped facilitate any of that.
Yeah, I think the city was go between.
And they got CARES Act money too, some of the businesses, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And, so, the ones that have closed, sad, but a lot of them wasn't so much that they weren't having customers. They couldn't get help.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Because Rena, for the restaurant, they couldn't. That's why they had to close several days a week.
Right.
They couldn't get workers.
Right.
And so that was horrible. And because I think most of the restaurants were, people appreciated them, goes and used them.
Right,
so there were other reasons, like you're saying, that they had to. And then most of them all have been replaced with businesses that seem to be thriving. I think about Mariano's is where Roberto's was.
Sure.
Fox's is going into
The
hotel.
California. I mean, there's a lot of new businesses.
Yeah, and
town,
new businesses. The Cornish Pasty.
Some of the things you brought up were in terms of customer service were roadblocks to getting new businesses in town, the permitting process and all that kind of stuff. So you just would like to keep an eye on that and make sure that it's easy and efficient for a company to come in and open a business here.
I hope so, because it seems like they've been coming in pretty rapidly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking that maybe they haven't, I haven't talked to those new businesses about how easy or hard it was.
Right.
But then, yeah, and then when I go to meetings at Women in Support of Women in Boulder City, mm-hmm. every meeting there are women entrepreneurs and are announcing their businesses.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I don't know if she was there, but I went to Iron Rose, I think, mm-hmm. one time, right next to Ace Hardware over there.
Right.
And that seems to be doing well. And I love the fact that they're putting the their plants and taking care of them over in the corner space.
Right, yeah,
I think
yeah,
that's wonderful. Yeah. And then the city, you know, has a redevelopment plan
mm-hmm.
with money that goes. Now, that has to be in the historic district, I think, to get that redevelopment
so,
money.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're trying to help that way. And I just think, personally, I help by eating out at local restaurants every day, every meal.
There you go.
And so, I mean, and I think, too, for other businesses, not just food, we need to do it in Boulder City.
Sure, yeah.
And I keep telling people, you can find, I mean, there's things in my cupboards I just used up and I didn't been sitting there for years. And then finally, you can find almost anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell everybody that, well, you know, I'm going to ask about the grocery. If you ask about the grocery, is I think the 99-cent store is great.
Yeah.
Good
exactly.
prices.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to be out of things very well much. I mean, I know everyone's having problems with purchasing things. But I just encourage people, do your business here.
Right.
Because gas is so expensive, too. You know,
right.
even if the prices are a little bit more expensive here,
what
it costs you to go to Henderson or Las Vegas is going to be it. So I just we need to support our businesses.
Yeah. Visit the Rainbow Club and Emerald Island Casinos for award-winning dining and the best selection of the newest video reel games, video keno, and video poker. Recognized by the Las Vegas Review Journal's Best of Las Vegas Award, Emerald Island Casino has been voted Best Video Poker, Best Paying Slots, Best Henderson Casino, Best Henderson Restaurant, Best Locals Casino Valleywide, Best Breakfast, Best Coffee Shop, and Best Diner. Rainbow Club's new restaurant, Triple B, was also voted Best Burger and Best Brunch. Emerald Island Casino and Rainbow Club Casino, where slot players are treated like royalty. Let's talk about in the last election, OHV vehicles, off-road vehicles, were voted down on the street. But I've been also been told now that if you live in Boulder City and you have an off-road vehicle, you're allowed to drive it on the streets into the desert. So, I think they turned down not allowing people to come out from outside of Boulder City. And so, do you think that should be reconsidered? Because again, that could be a tourist attraction as well.
Yeah, I've had to talk to people about that because I don't do off-highway vehicles or all-terrain vehicles. So I do have a high-clearance four-wheel drive that I take off-road. I don't drive it in. No.
Right.
But it's licensed and everything. So, I talked to people about it. And what I was hearing back then when it was first something was on the ballot
mm-hmm.
is that residents were saying that they didn't want the noisy and dirty vehicles in close proximity to their properties and homes and businesses. And parking on city streets, particularly downtown, which we have trouble parking,
mm-hmm.
That wasn't desirable in that. And I checked online about what the criteria is. They have a whole Nevada off-highway vehicles program online with information on registration, trail maps, mm-hmm. and other details. And then I talked to a couple of guys that I know that do have off-highway vehicles, and they go, they just find other places to go. Not in Boulder City.
Right, yeah.
So they seem, and so right now I thought when I was looking it up that it's still the law here in Boulder City and that it's not, if it's a law, I believe in following the law.
Yeah.
If it's a law, they need to enforce it and ban them. And I don't know what other things. I know some people are really passionate where they would like to be able to do, but you can do so much off-road places to go around that. Do you have to be on city streets just to access? I mean, I'm not sure why it's so important for people to go on city streets to access the trails and stuff.
Yep.
I don't know enough about that. I know I do a lot of hiking.
Sure.
So I'm on a lot of trails.
Yeah.
I would think there's ways they could access just from their house to a place.
Sure, right,
yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to come up again. It may. That's an issue.
We were just discussing the pool. That also was turned down during the last election, but almost because
taxes.
The expense of it, right?
It was the taxes.
So do you favor like a more modest proposal where it wouldn't cost the $40 million?
I don't know where that $40 million. I go to the pool almost every day when it's open. You know, they can't even keep the pool open because they can't get lifeguards and such, and. And I was there when they had the people that were making the conceptual plans mm-hmm. for the first ballot issue,
right.
they weren't architects, they weren't designers, and all they were doing was asking people what they would like. Well, guess what? Oh, a gym, more right. new racquetball courts, a volleyball court, three pools, one right. for the babies, one for yeah. the hot tub, one for the seniors. Mm-hmm. One, you know, so that's how this inflated number, which was, again, just conceptual based on feedback
right. yeah.
from the residents and all that. And I thought, why did they put that number out
yeah.
there? And then because it was going to be out of your property taxes, mm-hmm. of course, that, and that's when I talk to people, because they know I'm a big advocate for the pool
right.
and fighting for a pool for a long time. And they said, you know, why did they do it? We had to take it from our taxes, you know?
Right. Yeah, sure.
And that's why I give the mayor a lot of credit, because he got started that ad hoc pool committee, and I got on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to find out what just the essentials were, what
right.
you need from people who are the swim coach, mm-hmm. you know, other people who know more about construction of pools
right.
and all, and to do it economically. I mean, we still, because we don't have the money yet.
Mm-hmm.
They say there's doing some planning, but I don't know. They can't hire anyone
right.
unless they get the money. Though there was like a $1.3 million donation
mm-hmm.
that was anonymous
right.
that came in.
Sure. Right.
And I think, according to the committee, and the budget director, that I think $7 million from the capital improvement
sure, right.
was going to be dedicated to that.
Mm-hmm.
But 90% of it was going to come from the sale
right.
of the land
yeah.
for the
right.
pool.
Okay.
But,
great.
Yeah. But so I keep thinking, everyone who thought it was the, to me, it was not the cost that they were throwing out there that was the issue. It
mm-hmm.
was the way they were going to pay for it, by
okay.
raising your property taxes.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the airport. That was another big
okay.
issue in the last couple
mm-hmm.
of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hangar leases were taken over by the city. Didn't make the hangar lessees happy, but, you know, the city decided to go into business at the airport. Do you think that should be reconsidered? And because the next round of leases is coming up,
mm-hmm.
you know, that wasn't the entire hangars. It was just a little section of them. Should we go back and reconsider that? Because, you know, we're really not sure whether the city is making money or making the improvements that they need to make on the hangars?
Well, about the hangars, you mentioned the control tower too, but did the hangars first, you know, yeah, some are supposed to be up for renewal soon. And I do think that, I mean, the leases have a reversion clause in them.
Mm-hmm.
And if the time frame for the lease is up, then the lease requires the hangar to revert to the city. That's what the
it
lease
doesn't require
says.
It says the city can do that.
No, that is a requirement. It is stated there in black and white law, legally. It's there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it reversion clause in there, according to the lawyers I've talked to, that is hard. No, it's not optional. It reverts back to the city.
Right.
And, you know, a contract is a contract.
The city could negotiate another lease, though, with those hangar leases.
I imagine if they want to, but it's a contract, and when the contract's in, they're done. And I believe in the law, and the city charged a small amount to those tenants. And you know what they were doing? The tenants were subleasing at huge rates. So they're making all kinds of money off of those. And so that's why they're sad to lose their lease.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. I'm not the manager of the airport, and the FAA is involved in this more than the city is in terms of this. But I think that it belongs to the city. It should revert back to them. They need to read the contract. You don't
right,
sign a contract.
The city has never been in the business of leasing these hangars. They lease them, but the people they lease them to are responsible for doing all the improvements. Now if the city's leasing them themselves, they're responsible for doing the improvements. Not the people they lease it to, which includes fire suppression systems that are still not installed yet
mm-hmm.
in the ones the city took over. We also don't know the expenses that the city has put in there, because they just kind of roll that into you know, city funding. We can see the revenue that comes in, but we don't know what the expenses are. So, you know, I'm just saying, would you be in favor of looking at a full balance sheet of knowing who's, you know, what the expenses are, what the revenue is, what the city has to put into it before, you know, the next lease is ready to be taken up yet?
Well, you know, we all need to do our research and our homework and need to know what's going on. But so much of that is FAA controlled and not city controlled at all.
Not the hangars.
Not the hangars.
Certainly the
air traffic
control tower, yes.
Will be.
I mean, that's totally on.
And then they have a committee there too, right? An advisory committee to the manager.
They just replaced a couple of people on the committee who had some serious expertise with people that really knew nothing about aviation. So, you know, it's
well, so does the city council have something to do with that?
Yeah, the city council.
They appoint. They do the appointments.
Appoint the members, yes.
Yeah. And, well, they need to look over the affidavit, the resumes, and do the right thing. I mean, again, you got to do your homework.
Right.
And you have to do your research, and you have to do it right. But, no, I mean, all that I've heard about, and I've been on boards with some of the managers, and it's always challenging out there.
Sure.
And especially, well, not during the pandemic. I don't know what was going on, because none of the Papillon and none of those businesses could be doing work out of there. And so, and you know, I've, to be honest, perfectly honest, I don't think I've ever been there. I've never flown out of there, and I've never gone in there like some people. I guess they would.
They had an open house airport days. I've been in there a few times.
Did you go? I never gone in there. I mean, I get the closest I get is going to memorials at the veterans. Or going, I don't even have a dog. I can't even go to the dog park. So no, I really have to consult with the pilots and the experts and the FAA and everything else and really know what to do about that. But I thought, you know, I would, of course, listen to some of the meetings when the controversies were going on. But I really believe in contracts and the letter of the law and following the contracts. And you know, if that's what you signed, a 30-year thing, lease that was going to revert to the city, why are you fighting it?
Sure. So let's talk about utility rates.
Oh, can we talk about the tower, though?
Sure.
Okay, since we're on the airport.
That's, again, as you mentioned, though, that's really very dependent upon the FAA. They're going to pay apparently 95% of that bill. But do we really need it? Do we really want it?
See, and I think we do.
Yeah. Okay.
From all the pilots sometimes I talk to, that I mean, it's just like you have speed control, stop signs, etc. for vehicles, and air traffic control provides control of the air traffic, and I think it does it on the air as well as on the ground, and the FAA pays, like they told me, 90% of the costs, and to make the airport a safer airport. What I don't want to see, and they're assuring me that won't happen, we don't want to expand the runways or the airport and get more air traffic. We just want to make the air traffic safe there without having, you know, any. There have been some accidents that people never talk about, and some of them are single pilots, and it didn't happen right at the airport, but something bad happened, and it was really been sad, and I thought, oh my gosh, what's going on? So I don't know if that, I mean, I can't imagine flying in at night in an airport in this desert, you know, trying to find where to go and not hit anything or run over. It's amazing there haven't been more issues, but to me, an air traffic is just common sense, safety-wise.
Okay. So let's talk about the utility rates.
Okay.
And, you know, we've got all those solar farms down there. Do we think we should use some of that money we get from those solar leases to either, you know, help alleviate the increases in electricity rates here, or maybe even help with the utility infrastructure?
Oh, but I got a hold of the Public Works Director because our rates have not gone up in Boulder City. Make sure I want my stake, and the Public Works Director gave me, I didn't bring the sheet, but he sent me an email, and confirmed the rates have not risen, and we do get 40% of our entire city budget from solar, and the last contract that they just signed has a clause that allows the city to purchase power. Mm-hmm. I have always asked the city managers that whenever we started this, but they always told me that they didn't want to negotiate that because Boulder City wasn't paying for any of the infrastructure, anything. Sure. California needs to get clean energy by a certain date, and that was all being paid by California. And the only reason that they would come here is because, you know, the dam has saved our lives because of the infrastructure, the towers and stuff that to transport it. But this recent lease, they are going to be able to purchase solar. And then, so then I even have he sent me the dates of the utility meetings, like in 5/25/21, the council voted unanimously to approve a 3% electric rate reduction for all customers and a 10% reduction in monthly water service fees. And that was due to a study by this Raftellis, I never even heard of them, financial consulting group, and then the utility committee, which Warren Harhey started, which I think is doing a good job, supported the decision. And they also recommended not to accept any or act any franchise fee relating to the Boulder City utilities now or in the future. And then this was also reported in the BC Review on May 27, 2021. So, I think the question's erroneous. Our rates are the lowest, as far as I know, in all of the state, I believe, not just in southern Nevada. So I think we're doing good. But, we want clean energy. And because now, when I moved here, it was 100% hydroelectric.
Yeah.
Energy. So now what's it down to, about 50% or less now?
Right.
So you want to supplement that with clean energy, if at all possible and stuff. So but I think that, you know, the electricity rates here are very good.
Okay, great. So you know, in the last couple of years, the mayor and city council dismissed three members of the staff. Two of those staff members brought suits against the mayor, former city council member, and the city. Mm-hmm. And the litigation is still ongoing. How do you think the city should resolve this situation?
Well, as the, what I've been, my investigation, the two members who brought the suits, let's see, and you're on, they're ongoing, mm-hmm. and I think they should be settled by the courts. So far, the city's been the winner. And last I checked, it was at the Nevada Supreme Court now, mm-hmm. awaiting their decision. And from what I've, from legal people that I know, said if the city settles the case before the court makes a decision, it could cost the city a substantial amount of money, which they said that's unjustified expense. You need to, you know, Nevada's a right-to-work state, the appointed a people, and then an employee can be terminated without cause, and the city has a very good chance of winning, is what they're saying. But if the city settles before the court decides, it's going to cost them a boatload of money, is what they said.
You know, we've seen estimates of $300,000 in court costs already, though. I mean, how much longer can we, that go on?
None of that came up when I was doing the research on that, and they're saying the cities where they haven't had to pay, and that they expect that if this is a that even when you get to the ethics one, I can talk about that, too.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. The ethics board ruled that the mayor acted with animus against these two staff members. Would you support sanctioning the mayor for his actions?
No, because it's not true anyway.
The ethics committee found
No, they
that.
Did not. Mr. Morris' allegation contained that statement. The ethics commission did not rule on that statement. It was him. Mr. Morris, who said it, not the ethics commission.
I'd like to see that, those
questions. So that was, I've got that data from, where did I get this from? But reportedly, Mr. Morris was given a confidential letter, so the public does not know what decisions were made or who was cited for what. But the ethics commission also ordered Mr. Morris to attend and complete ethics training within 2 years of this ruling and within 6 months of seeking public office or as an employee. So basically, the people are telling me that no, that because he puts it in the paper, his opinion pages. Those are his opinions. They're not the facts of the case, according to the lawyers they've been talking to. And no, I don't think the mayor, you know, I mean, I think that if anything else, when I was reading the transcripts and stuff like that, I thought the two employees that got fired, that they were doing animus toward the mayor. Mm-hmm. That's why I think they were happy to like, and they're appointed positions.
Sure.
They're not elected.
Right.
I mean, it seems
they
like
serve, they serve at the pleasure. Of
right.
The city council.
So I'm thinking when the new council came in, they should maybe reappoint some of those appointed positions so that they are going to be able to work together collaboratively to get things done without the animus.
Right. They had contracts, though. There were actually stipulations in the contract where you could lay them off if you paid them certain amount of money, and apparently the city decided not to do that. So so I think that's where the lawsuits arose from. But
I knew they wanted money from the city, but
right. Okay.
They were making enough money and having lots of privileges other jobs, doing other things.
Okay. So, you know, elections in Boulder City are nonpartisan, and that's probably the way it should be. But there's a significant desire from voters to understand, you know, what the philosophy of governments are of the candidates. So would you be comfortable in telling us what party you're registered with?
Well, I was going to just say that, you know, you're correct. City elections are nonpartisan. And I tell people I'm conservative when it comes to finances and growth. But I'm liberal when it comes to social issues like human rights and workers' rights. And I'm a lifelong Democrat, raised by a brilliant, passionate, kind, wonderful Democratic mother who volunteered for everything. Did everyone's taxes, worked to make sure people with disabilities, like her son, my brother, to get services. But I always say, too, if anyone wants to know how I would vote for a particular issue, text me, email me.
Yep.
And we can talk about it or whatever. But no, I'm people. I know this town. I've been here a long time. I know this is a very Republican town and conservative, pretty much pretty conservative. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of friends who are Republicans and conservatives, and we still can talk about the issues to a point. If we drink too much, maybe not. So no. But I'm proud to be a Democrat.
Okay.
And
great. So, you know, there were some, disagreements certainly between staff and council and even between some council members. How would you work with other members of council and the staff if you're elected to city council?
Well, the same way that I worked with students and faculty for 52 years when I was working, that, you know, you need to listen to the issues and do your research. I'm big in doing research and analyzing the merits of the issues and sharing your thoughts with others and having them share with you. And I'm always willing to have a conversation. My field is speech language pathology, so I always want to talk, and I always talk loud and fast. So I hope it's not ruining the podcast because of that.
If people want to learn more about you or your views on any issues, how can they contact you?
I've been kind of reluctant to put out all my info because I get so much. Everyone gets so much. But I think that I've been giving people my landline because it's just it goes to voicemail, and then I call back and stuff like that. And I've been giving my contact information to so many of the interviewers and so many other people that I think it's probably okay to get that out. I think that
I think an email address is fine.
You know? Yeah, so
I mean, can kind of
I got
anything.
It from you and the social BC Social got it. Right, I mean, everyone's been able to get a hold of me, so so I think that. And then what will happen? I mean, if I really get in office, then they give you a BC. Nevada email address, so it doesn't have to go to all my personal stuff.
Okay,
Nevada,
so they can find it. I think you can find it on the website now. They have the candidates.
I think so, but I know I was reluctant to give out too much information at that. But if I do get elected, then I know I can use that. People can reach me through the BouldercityNevada.org site.
Well, Valerie, thanks for taking the time and good luck in the campaign.
Okay, thank you, Roger.
Thanks for joining us on the Boulder City Podcast, sponsored by the Emerald Island Casino and the Rainbow Club Casino in downtown Henderson, where slot players are treated like royalty. Special thanks to Boulder City Social for partnering with us on this election series and helping to disseminate the program. So we'll see you next week on the Boulder City Podcast.